Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Addiction and opioid abuse is a serious problem not only in Wisconsin, but nationally as well. Drug overdoses have become a leading cause of deaths and injury and have surpassed motor vehicle deaths in 36 states. According to a Trust for America's Health report, Wisconsin has the 29th highest rate of overdose deaths using a three-year average. And experts say the problem is only growing here. One local family knows the struggles surrounding addiction all too well. Patty and Charlie Lomas lost their son CJ to a heroin overdose at the age of 26 in 2012, but they've turned their pain and loss into a mission to help others. After their son's death, Patty and Charlie founded the CJ Lomas Recovery Foundation to be a resource and place of support for families and addicts going through similar struggles they experienced. We'll be examining addiction and the issues that surround it over the next few days on Lake Effect. But to start off our series, Patty and Charlie Lomas told Audrey Nowakowski about their son.
CJ grew up in a two-parent household. We were very involved parents. He has a younger brother, Christopher, who's 2.5 years younger. They were both adopted right out of the hospital. He was involved in every sport you could think of. As a teenager, his passion was snowcross racing. And then things changed a little bit in middle school. He started drinking on the weekends with, like, his friends. That lasted for a while. And then he started smoking pot on the weekends just with his friends. And I think he always had this thought that it made him feel more comfortable. It made him feel normal. He could talk to people a little bit better. The first time he came home drunk, he was in eighth grade. And as parents, you worry, but it wasn't like a huge red flag to us because we felt as though it was the normal progression of growing up and making his own decisions and figuring out what was right and wrong.
Maybe a little earlier than some, but
right.
Pretty normal.
But there were consequences. But again, that didn't last very long, and suddenly he started becoming a little bit more distant, telling us half-truths, not being where he said he was going to be. His grades started declining in high school. He started cutting some classes. He was drinking more, smoking more pot, and then we found out that he had escalated his use to pills. Pain medication, correct. Mostly opiates. After that didn't work for some time, then he started crushing and snorting them. And what happens is the pain medication becomes too expensive, not readily available, and he started using heroin. And once he started using heroin, it was pretty much the beginning of the end for him. So throughout this whole journey, he had been through, up to this point, two inpatient rehab facilities, countless sober living, counseling, worked the program, meaning AA, NA, worked the steps, had a sponsor.
Pretty much the last 6 months, he was doing extremely well. He had just graduated from a program up in Oshkosh, intense inpatient program called the Nova Family Counseling Program. They did a wonderful job. I cannot say enough about those people. He did a stint here in Milwaukee in a 90-day sober living environment. He had got himself a job. He was very proud of that. Had a steady girlfriend who was very good for him at the time because she was holding him accountable. If there's a bright side to the end of this story, we do continue to embrace the last 6 months with him because throughout this journey, as it gets, let's just say, a little dark and cloudy and ugly, for that last 6 months, we felt as though we had our son back. For whatever reason, he evidently thought it would be okay to try and do heroin one more time, and that took his life. We sat at the funeral home making arrangements with the family, and when the subject of flowers came up, My wife and I both looked at each other and said, no flowers, as though we had thought this through and done it in stereo together. But we looked at each other and said, there's got to be a better way. So we decided then and there that we were going to start a foundation. We call it the C.J. Lomas Recovery Foundation. We had no idea what we were going to do. But we do know and did know that at that time, as parents and family members who are also lost in this addiction, because it truly is a family disease, it is not restricted to the addict. It affects everybody in the family. And 5 years ago, we really didn't have any place to discuss these issues, really didn't have any resources at our fingertips, and waddled through that as best we could as parents. But I will tell you, for the families out there that are dealing with this right now, there's no cookie-cutter way to handle this. There are resources out there, but you struggle through those until you find the ones that work for you. But one of CJ's suggestions to us when we were struggling through this, and he did have a lot of compassion for us.
He knew how
when he was clean and sober, he did know the kind of devastation he had put the family through. And nobody was more regretful about that than he was. But along the way, as parents, the hardest thing to do is to separate the addiction from the child. But throughout the worst of the worst, we both knew, and my son Christopher also knew, that that wasn't our CJ, but we didn't know how to bring our CJ back. So his suggestion when he was working that last 6 months and doing well was that he thought it would be wise to have some addicts talking to parents from their perspective. As addicts, thinking like addicts, which unless you are one, you have no idea. Today, I am very grateful that we have those people in our group, and I cannot say enough about how much of an impact they have on parents.
Well, and going back, you mentioned his first instance of coming home drunk was in middle school, and that escalated to harder drugs. But typically we think of people addicted to painkillers as adults or as they needed it for an injury or something, and it progresses from there. So how did he get access to these medications to take them recreationally?
Well, some of it started with a couple of injuries he had. During a snowcross race, he had wound up with an injury to his knee and a floating kneecap, and the next thing we know, he was on Vicodin. At that time, he had already reached the age of 18, so everything wasn't being shared with us. And little did we know how big those bottles of Vicodin were and how many pills were in them. Along the way, he also ended up getting involved in a serious motorcycle accident, which also put him back on a stronger medication, which was Oxycontin at the time, and I think those were 80 milligram pills.
But I think prior to that, the way he got access to it is because I think 5 years ago, we didn't recognize that these pain medications were as dangerous as they were. And we've become such a society of give me a pill for this, a pill for that, a pill for this. And they're in our medicine cabinets everywhere. And I think he got them from school.
As a parent looking at your kid, and I'm sure many parents can agree that middle school, high school is a tough time for communication regardless, what kind of struggles did you see him going through, whether he was able to open up to you about it or not? Was there an instance that you noticed, like, this isn't my son?
I don't think there was one particular instance. I think this disease is such a progressional disease that it, like I stated, it starts off normally with adolescence, with alcohol, escalates to, you know, marijuana, and then, you know, just moves up from there. So I think it's a combination of things. Not attending school on a regular basis and hearing from them about that. Grades declining, friends changing. He became very isolated, didn't really want to talk to us.
And very irritable.
Very irritable, correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a combination of things. And I think one of the most important things that we've learned throughout this is that there's two things. You have to open the dialogue at a very early age to your kids. Talk about the progression of drugs, the dangers of it, because the adolescents are no different than we were growing up. They don't believe that it's going to ever happen to them. They're not stupid. I'm not going to become a drug addict. Well, I can tell you, I don't know one person that wakes up every morning and thinks, oh, I want to shoot heroin today. This is a great life. It just doesn't happen. So opening up that dialogue and stopping the stigma and making kids aware of the dangers, not even to try it once. And I think another key is that we, as parents and families, we need to stop the thought of it won't happen to my kid, because addiction is all around us. It's not only in the back alleys. Heroin is in the suburbs. It's everywhere. And I think we need to change that mentality, because Charlie and I often say it was our child. And he grew up in a normal, loving, had every opportunity he could have. And he was a drug addict. He was a heroin addict.
How did that make you guys feel as parents?
You know, you walk around with so much shame and guilt and what ifs. I wish I could have. I wish I did. And not only for him, but like Charlie said, this is a family disease. And if you have other children, they suffer just as much, because you go to the one that needs the help, and then the good child, the low-maintenance one, is the one that kind of gets left on the back burner.
And we hear these stories from parents that come to our meetings all the time. You know, first of all, most parents don't want to talk about it because they don't really know if they can talk to people that understand. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute we understand all this, because we don't. But what we do know is that they're having an opportunity to sit down in an atmosphere where nobody is going to judge the next thing that comes out of their mouth. Nobody is going to feel the way Patty just described, that they should be walking around with a lot of shame and guilt. What they are, just like most addicts are, they're lost. They're looking for some guidance. They're looking for some suggestions, and they're trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Because addicts are very good at camouflaging their issues. And once a family has an opportunity to sit down in a room in that atmosphere and be able to just open up and talk about it, is a huge load off their shoulders. Sponsors, programs, and networking with people that have all been through similar situations is what most of the addicts that we have met that are in long-term recovery attribute their success to. And I have a saying, if addiction was a race, it would be the only one without a finish line, because it is life, it is forever. And in order to continue the successful journey, nobody does these things alone. And the support the recovery community has to offer is just tremendous.
So how old was CJ when he passed away?
He was 26.
And how long has it been since
It'll be 5 years in March.
In the time since his death, have you discovered or learned any key points that you pass along to others?
Education. We have to educate children at a very early age, and parents. And I think we've come a long way in the past 5 years. When CJ passed away, there was not this media talk about heroin and how dangerous it is and the epidemic. It was more of a moral failing. And it's truly not a moral failing. It's a disease. Period. End of discussion. It is a disease. And if the disease is not taken care of through either a program or sponsor, it's going to creep back up, just like diabetes. If you don't take your medication, you sit around and eat chocolate and can't, your diabetes is going to come back. So it's no different. And I think that's where the stigma lies. because people don't understand it. And honestly, if you're not involved in it, I can understand why you don't understand it.
Well, and what message would you want to share with people who either don't understand it or even families who are recognizing or going through the same struggles that you have been?
I think families that are going through what we went through right now, my best advice would be to take care of themselves and get some help for themselves. There, like Charlie had said, there is a lot of help out there. It might be hard to find it, but there's a lot of help for people. But I think the education and the understanding and the, you know, the day that CJ died, we could have chose to bury our head in shame and guilt and never talk about this again. And when we decided we weren't going to do that, we decided that we were going to be proactive. And I wish we would have been more proactive in his disease rather than reactive. And, you know, our hope when we started the foundation was, and the family program, was to take parents from A to Z a little bit quicker than we got there, with much better results because of the experience that we had over the last 8 years with CJ's addiction.
Well, and we've been talking about the struggles you and your family went through and CJ's death, but to close it out, let's focus on how he lived. What's a favorite memory that the both of you have of him? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty to choose from, but as you work towards helping other families, you know, what positive things do you think about with CJ?
Oh, he was so funny.
Yeah.
And he loved kids.
Yeah, little ones.
Little babies. So there's a lot of good memories about our little nieces and nephews growing up and how much they loved Uncle CJ. And I think the weekend before he passed away, he actually took our great nieces and nephews to the
circus.
He was just such a great kid. Snowcross racing every weekend with him and Christopher was a lot of fun. Baseball. They both played baseball, and we were gone every weekend. So, yeah, there's a lot to miss.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that?
Well, one that's going to hang on for me for the rest of my life is it was Christmas evening. The Bears were playing the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay that evening. And CJ was doing so well in his recovery that our daughter Katie and my son Christopher and CJ and I went to the game. It was 45 degrees. There was no wind. It was a night game. And the Bears got slaughtered in Green Bay, so the picture's perfect. But on the way out of the stadium, CJ hollered, "Huddle up, huddle up." And we stopped in the middle of the parking lot, and the four of us got together in a huddle, and he looked at us and said, "This is the greatest Christmas I've ever had." And the look on his face and that statement will be something that I will hang on to forever.
Well, his story will certainly hang on to me and hopefully other listeners. So I'd like to thank you both so much for telling us about CJ and being willing to come in and open yourselves up.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Patty and Charlie Lomas lost their son CJ to a heroin overdose in March of 2012. They continue to share their family's story and combat addiction through the CJ Lomas Recovery Foundation. For more information and resources on how to deal with addiction and recovery, you can find links at wuwn.com.